is the People's Show with Bik Nizar and Randeep Janda.
Final hour of the People's Show. Bik Nizar, Randeep Janda, here on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650. If you missed anything, we talked to Irfan Ghaffar about the state of the Canucks right now. JT Miller's name all up in the rumors across the league. You can go catch that in hour one. Ron McLean in hour two. If you're joining us now, though, we just dropped the trivia question. And we got to find out who won. We got to find out what the right answer was. We asked you, which team was Spencer Martin drafted by in 2013? If you got the right answer, and we picked you, you got yourself a pair of tickets to the Canucks and Islanders on February 9th. What's the right answer, Randy?
The correct answer, the Colorado Avalanche drafted Spencer Martin back in 2013. We had a lot of Tampa Bay Lightning answers. That's the team that the Canucks acquired him from, but he was actually drafted.
The wrong answer.
Exactly. He was drafted by the Avs, actually had a couple of games played with the Avs as well early on in his career. Congratulations to Kieran in Vancouver. You have won yourself a pair of tickets to the Canucks versus the Islanders on February 9th.
Tonight, I'm hyped for this. It's going to be a blast. It's a big sports day, man. It's a big sports weekend as well. Sunday is going to be epic with the NFL playoffs going on and also the Canada-USA match. But tonight, it is a big, big match with Canada game tonight versus Honduras. I'm geeked up for this. In this segment of People Show, brought to you by CertainTeed, the pro's choice for roofing, siding, drywall, insulation, and ceiling systems. CertainTeed Pro all the way. You know, Canada's done such a great job here of kind of changing our expectations of what this qualification process has been, Randeep. And tonight, it's hard not to just let your imagination run wild a little here of what a victory could mean, even in difficult circumstances, you know, having to travel in CONCACAF, which we know was never easy, and going back to Honduras, some awful memories there of results gone by.
Yeah.
But it's I'm excited, man. This run through this qualification process has opened my mind a great deal. And it's unfair on Canada to say, hey, we've changed the goalposts as this qualification has gone by. But it has to me. I wanted just an honest run and say, hey, load up for 2026. And now, look, we're here after eight matches, top of the table. You know, qualification should be the bare minimum. And that's unfair to say, hey, we changed the expectations. But they've changed the expectations because of their play. It's been that it has not been empty results. These are very, very proven, solid performances they've done here through eight matches.
Well, before qualifying began, if you looked at this team on paper, you could say, hey, man, on paper, this team looks solid. There are some question marks, but on paper, it looks solid. But in soccer, as well as, you know, both of us know, Bik, and we've followed the sport for a long time as fans and you know, whether working and reporting on soccer, it's that on paper, there's a lot of great teams. Some of the best European powers on paper look really good. And guess what happens in a qualifying? It goes real bad real quick. In a tournament, on paper doesn't mean anything because you could fizzle away if everybody does not gel, if they don't have that mentality or the strategy to win. With Canada, you know, they have both of those things. They have skill, but they also have the right strategy and the mentality. And that's really the difference with John Herdman. And what he's been able to do with this team is that star-level players matter a lot. Don't get me wrong. But playing the right way, utilizing the right way, has been something that John Herdman has built up and he's done a great job at. And beyond that, putting in that winner's mentality of, you've got some really good, you know, star-level players on the squad. When Alphonso Davies is healthy, he's there. You know, Atiba Hutchinson has been the most decorated Canadian, men's Canadian player going back a decade plus and continues to do that in Turkey. You've got the resumes are there, but they also have that mental makeup now where you're saying they're not afraid of the moment. So when we look back at 2012 in Honduras where they got drubbed, you know, gave up eight goals and all, you know, those bad memories, those nightmares that you bring up, the difference now between any other Canadian men's team is that the mentality is there. You look at those points you mentioned, they're one ahead of the United States. Goal differential, it's not like they're fluking their way there. They're the best in the entire group when it comes to goal differential. And what makes this team different is that they can go to places like San Pedro Sula. They can go to places like Haiti. They can go to places that historically have been areas that Team, you know, Canada on the men's side trips up on. I don't think that happens this time because they've got quality, but they've also got that mentality of they're not scared anymore. These guys are playing, you know, Atiba Hutchinson's playing in Besiktas. Have you ever watched a Besiktas game? They're intense, man. They are, you know, Kyle Larin is there as well. So I think the mentality with the skill has really taken this team and what they are to the next level. And that's why tonight I know they're missing Alphonso Davies. And Eustáquio is not playing as well. He's a very influential midfielder for this team. It doesn't matter to me. I still think they have the quality to get a result and potentially a win here.
You go through the results that they have had, right? And you talk about playing with no fear. Like I think about that game in Azteca, right? It's they took the game for stretches to Mexico and were willing to play on-the-ball soccer. It wasn't, hey, let's recede. Maybe we'll get a goal off set pieces and then we'll hold on for a draw or something like that. It was, hey, we're going to play with you and we'll compete with you. That was a big game in the development of this team. And obviously you mentioned, hey, no Davies tonight. So the focus suddenly gets shifted elsewhere. And we're going to do this thing here of who are you watching for tonight? Text in your thoughts, 650-650. But to be honest, Randy, I'm kind of watching all 11 guys. I want to see, like, the gravity of Alphonso Davies is taken out. So, as much as it is about, hey, one person really needs to be the star and all that, the team cohesiveness today is going to be really interesting to watch.
I can get that. You know, this is a couple of things there, because your one-man counterattack is not necessarily there. So do you essentially shift the way you play? You have to. When your best player's not there, you're going to have to adjust a little bit. He is a cheat code when he's on the field and with Davies that he can create something out of nothing and he can take 2 to 3 defenders out of the equation, which opens up a little bit more space for a Kyle Larin or somebody else like a, you know, somebody else playing through the middle. So I get that. You're going to rely on the collective more than the individual that can change the game for you. So I understand that perspective, but I also think this is a big moment for Tejon Buchanan, right? Mm-hmm. He switches over to Belgium. He's kind of the next big thing in Canadian soccer, which I think he's been given that label. He's shown why he can be special at a young age of, you know, 22 years old. But at the same time, this is kind of an added moment for him where he can show that, yes, he is kind of maybe that. You know, you have a Jonathan David, you have a Alphonso Davies, but Tejon Buchanan can be that dynamic player that poses that same problem. He's not Alphonso Davies right now. He may not ever get to the level of Alphonso Davies. That's a tough comparison to make, but can he provide that number two option? So I get the collective element of it, but I'm still looking at Tejon Buchanan today. If he starts, we don't have clarification on those starting lineups as a player that can play and force the issue with defenders and really pose a problem, especially on that counterattack. In San Pedro Sula, there's probably going to be, you know, you're probably eating possession. You're probably in a situation where, yeah, the home team is going to try to go for it and they're going to really try to boss the game if they can. That counterattack, how do you shut up a crowd, a hostile crowd? You hit them on the counter, and that's what the Canadian team has done really well throughout all of this.
If I had to pick out a player, I'm actually kind of just a one region of the pitch. I'm going central defense and goalie, right? Like Miller playing, if it's Milan Borja and Annette tonight, we'll see what the full lineup looks like. But like that's where I'm looking. Can you provide the foundation of what the entire roster looks like tonight? And if they're solid, then I'll believe a result is coming. And they should be able to, you know, get out of here with at least a draw. That to me is the minimum expectation here. I'm expecting at least a point tonight. What's fair to look at throughout this whole point? Because I think a lot of fans would view it the way I just kind of mentioned it. It's expectations have changed moving forward. These three matches here, how many points do you want to see?
I'd like to see. I think an ideal scenario is 5. You know, mm-hmm. 100% record would be great, but let's be realistic here. That U.S. matchup is going to be difficult. That's a tough one, even though you've got it at home and, you know, you're playing. Oh, sorry, you've got it on the road there. So to me, I think that is something that I look at and say that could be a difficult one. But I'm looking at ideal scenario. You get a draw there. But at the very least, 4 to 5 points. You pick up the two on, you know, on the road in El Salvador and Honduras. Tough matchups. But this team has now become better. The quality is, in my opinion, the expectations are there where you can take care of business in both of those hostile environments. I think the U.S. game will still be a difficult one because they've got some really good players like Weston McKennie and go through that roster of, you know, Pulisic and everybody that on their, you know, on their home turf, that's a tough out still for Canada. But give me 4 points, and if I'm being really optimistic, 5.
I think 4 is the number for me, right? 4 is probably the number that gets you feeling really comfortable where this is going, obviously, long term. And, you know, I'm leaving a certain margin for error, obviously, that maybe, hey, something goes wrong in El Salvador and that match becomes a bit difficult. But 5 is probably the right number, where it's just like, hey, one win, two draws, you get out there, and suddenly, hey, 5 points gets you that magic number of 21, Randy.
Yeah, and also, you know, that U.S. result is important because the last thing you want is just that team to pick up that point on you, right? You want to make sure that you keep that distance between number 1 and 2. And you can't control what Mexico does. You can't control what the other teams can do, but you can control what the United States does. Tough matchup. I look at that and say, okay, if you can pick up in any form 4 points, ideally 5, through this, you know, this qualifying period, you're setting yourself up really, really well. It's a double screen night, man. You're going to be watching the Canucks game on Sportsnet. And on Sportsnet, you got, you know, Canada versus Honduras as well. Like, this is a big, big matchup where, yeah, you're excused if you want to pay attention to two things at once tonight.
Sunday is going to be a fire, man. Sunday, the Canada US plus NFL playoffs, like, let's go. That is going to be fire all day Sunday, and fresh off of a Canucks game as well.
Yeah, everything's going on with it's good to have, you know, strong teams on both sides of international soccer for men and women. The women have been doing their thing nearly for 2 decades, and salute to them because, you know, they've been able to create the momentum that the men's side is now carrying on. But finally, it's nice to have the men's team really be in that position where you're saying, so 2022 World Cup is legit a chance, Bick. That's, I still, you know, being born in 1986, and I was literally like 2 weeks old when they played in the World Cup. That's a wild thought for a generation of soccer fans.
Randy, I never thought I would see it in my lifetime. Like, genuinely, I never thought I would see it in my lifetime unless they hosted. And even in this process, it's like, you can see the talent, and you know you have Alphonso Davies, and it's like, okay, cool. Well, we'll see what happens. And whether it's having your guard up just because of years of, I don't know if it'll ever happen. And maybe as a country, we didn't earnestly look at the opportunity. And then to see the players grow into these roles. And I can't wait to go watch that feature Earth was talking about, the BBC did, about Canada being a sleeping giant for soccer. So much has changed in 8 matches of how you perceive Canadian soccer. It's mind-blowing to me.
It's a game changer, and I had a chance to read that piece on the BBC, actually, and it was a heavy focus on Alphonso Davies and John Herdman. Check it out if you can, but it's the way that Canadian soccer is now being talked about, especially the men's side. It's a game changer, and I think if you had even gone back 2 years ago, I remember covering the team and watching those games when, you know, Benito Floro was in charge, and it was an absolute mess. It was a mess. They were picking out players from that didn't even have club teams, to now actually having this on Canadian TV and being excited about it. It's a game changer, and credit goes to the players, but credit also goes to what they've been able to do at, you know, Canada Soccer and that culture change. And John Herdman's a big part of that too.
Bick Nizar, Randy Bganda here on The People's Show. The segment brought to you by CertainTeed, the pro's choice for roofing, siding, drywall, insulation, and ceiling systems. CertainTeed, pro all the way. Let's talk to our guy, Ken Priestley, a former NHLer, Stanley Cup winner, and our Mr. Fix-It from Dunbar Lumber. Ken, how are you today?
Not bad. It's one of those days where all of a sudden you're seeing the sun in Ladner, and you don't really want to work in this. What is this?
Has the fog been coming down in Ladner as well? Has it been quite foggy there?
The fog lifted like 20 minutes ago, and now we don't have a cloud in the sky, and it's like fresh on spring. So everybody's sitting in the park and enjoying life right now. It's crazy.
That's kind of how Canucks fans are feeling right now. The fog lifted and a new management team has taken over, and there's no clouds in the sky right now. Have you been part of a team when a new regime steps in? What's that like for players?
Yeah, you know, I was probably multiple regimes. Pittsburgh wasn't quite that much of a turnover, but it all depends, really, right? I mean, it's always a breath of fresh air for everybody because you're looking at a totally different perspective, or someone's coming in with a totally different perspective, and hopefully you're part of that plan, and all you can do is take it game by game and show what you can do and show what you can, you know, what you're worth. And hopefully you're a part of the big picture.
Well, culture change has been a big talking point here in Vancouver. And not only that, Jim Rutherford's, delivered on that, bringing in Patrick Allvin, Emily Castonguay. From a player's perspective, Ken, why is team culture so important for a player? Like the day-to-day and just being in that right environment, like does a player, you know, how much do you feed into that? How much does it matter to you? And as you go through the process of a season?
Well, I think if there's a connection between management, coach, and player, I think it always makes for a better environment. I really do, because you get a little bit of feedback from not only your coach, but you're not walking on a plane and walking by all the brass and then everybody just kind of leaning to one side and no one's talking to each other. You get a little bit of a connection with the guy that's actually looking after your job. And if there's a connection between GM and coach with all the players, I think the players really appreciate that because they get they just don't feel that they're just a player. They feel like they're part of something that everybody's included, and they're hopefully on the right track to being more successful.
We'll see tonight Vasily Podkolzin and Nils Höglander getting a shot in the top six. Their minutes have been kind of limited recently under Bruce Boudreau. What have you seen in their game so far?
They're coming along. I mean, I think there's moments, right? I think Bruce might be thinking like the consistency part of it. He's had them for a few months now, but in his mind, he may have different visions and different thoughts of where they can play. He might have thought that maybe they were going to contribute more offensively than they have, or more, maybe they were going to be more defensive. You know, I think it's still a feel out process for young players and this group. I mean, Bruce Boudreau has been here and the team has definitely upped their game intensity wise. I think with the situation that they've gone through is just unfortunate. I mean, they get to 8 wins in a row, and then all of a sudden, you know, things just beyond their control start to happen, and that's never a good thing. But they've still managed to compete and stay with that upbeat brand of hockey that Bruce sort of wanted this team to play. It's just unfortunate that this COVID thing sort of took over for a little bit and took some key pieces out of their lineup.
Absolutely. And one of those pieces, and two of those pieces, Thatcher Demko and Yaroslav Halak, they are, you know, luckily out of the protocol now, and Yaroslav Halak is going to need some time based on not being able to practice for some time. It looks like Thatcher Demko will join up with the team in Calgary. But Spencer Martin, we talked about him last week with you as well, Ken. And, you know, two teams he's played against, Florida Panthers, not a big deal, one of the best teams in the league. And then the Edmonton Oilers, Drysdale and McDavid combined for 17 shots on goal alone in that game. You know, just his game, and especially that Edmonton one, it felt like, you know, this guy was just looking really composed and really impressive to watch. I know there was maybe one bad goal there that he want back, but what have you thought of his playing two of the toughest, you know, teams in the sense that they have some star players on both of those teams, and how he's looked coming out of both of those games?
You know what? Spencer had nothing to lose. He was being thrown into a situation where you're playing these teams that are so high up in the league that there's not really an expectation. Just keep us within striking distance. And I think he did exactly that and more. I wasn't able to watch all the Edmonton game the other day. I got back for the third period and the overtime. And, you know, the way he looked and the way he was battling, and it's contagious, right? I mean, they surrender a lead and then they get back to it, but you know, they were just seconds away from going to a shootout and things might have been different. But he answered the bell in every way, and I think it was it's an encouraging thing to see as a player, as a teammate on the bench, that you want to play in front of this guy, because look what he's given us. He's given us a chance. Let's see if we can get this win for him.
He is our guy, Ken Priestley, our Mr. Fix-It from Dunbar Lumber, the smart alternative. Visit Dunbar Lumber on Bridge Street in Ladner or Arbutus in Vancouver, online at dunbarlumber.com. Ken, thanks a lot. We'll talk next week.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Enjoy that soccer. It's going to be exciting.
Can't wait. Can't wait for that match. Thank you very much. It is Ken Priestley from Dunbar Lumber. All right, we do it every day here on The People's Show. Don't at me if you got a hot take. Drop it into our inbox right now, 650-650, to the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox for Don't At Me.
Your takes uninterrupted. Don't at me. Text in your submissions to 650-650.
Don't at me. I said, what a hell.
Brought to you by LeaseBusters. Get out of your vehicle lease with ease, confidence, and a LeaseBusters leasing specialist to guide you through the journey. Go to LeaseBusters.com to start the process today. Don't at me on your main screen on Sunday. It should be Canada soccer, not the NFL playoffs.
Ooh, I like that. I like that fiery take. Okay, but
it's too big of a match, man. It is too big of a match. Like, this is what I've been waiting a lifetime for a moment like this.
Okay, you're preaching to the choir here, because I'm a soccer fan just like you, but I wonder how NFL fans and hockey fans feel about that. Hit us up in the text inbox, 650-650. Like,
the match might actually be over by the time the Bengals kick off, actually.
Yeah, Canada.
But nevertheless.
Yeah, could be over in the first half hour. Canada could just run roughshod over the United States.
Hey, I see how you work it.
All right, I got one here as well. Don't ask me.
Where you're laying down.
Yeah, I'm confident. I'm confident for Team Canada. You got to believe it before you achieve it, right? Don't at me. But Nate McKinnon's broken nose is the most reported injury, minor injury, that we have seen in a long time. Listen, that hit yesterday was perfectly clean. There's nothing wrong with it. It was bad timing, if anything. Nate McKinnon gets injured. He's a star player. But the man has a broken nose, people. People are asking whether that's a dirty hit. Come on, get out of here with that. He's a star, but the dude has a nose that is bent a little bit more left than it should be. Let's move on.
Just a busted nose, reported by Emily Kaplan. And I didn't have a big problem with the play.
No.
To me, it was a hockey play gone wrong.
No, that man, that's the reaction of Nate McKinnon. You can even see that Taylor Hall's kind of trying to get out of the way, if anything. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a weird kind of dynamic there. That's not a dirty hit. I saw all the major networks, including ours, saying clean or dirty. It's like, that's not even a question, man.
Don't at me. Evander Kane will average 1.5 points per game the rest of the season. Unsigned text. So it's official. Well, it's about as close as you can get to official. A couple reports saying it's been a verbal agreement, but you'd expect it to wrap up pretty soon. The NHL did just drop a press release saying they have concluded their investigation on Evander Kane for cross-border travel as well.
Okay, so there you go. That's we'll see how that. You know what the intriguing thing is? And Irf mentioned this earlier with Evander Kane, Vic. This weekend could be the debut for when Evander Kane, apparently. So, hockey day in Canada, you're looking at that early game against the Montreal Canadiens. Could happen pretty soon here. Donkey the Roofer coming in with this one. Don't at me. F1 is more entertaining than soccer.
I'll defer to you on this one.
Why not both? Why not? That's how I live my life. They're both exciting. I love soccer. I love F1. Why not both?
I thought you were going to pull a Fast and Furious there. I live my life a quarter mile at a time.
Yeah, that too. That too.
Halsey in Surrey, don't at me. Jim Rutherford trades Brandon Sutter for Eric Goodbranson.
Okay. That's a take.
Mike and Victoria. I'm fine if Jim Rutherford trades Miller and Brock Besser, as long as he gets help where we need it and some draft picks to stock our cupboards.
Would you say, you know, that take is in the minority? Because it feels like, this is how I believe, right? Like, having a player ready to, you know, contribute right now is probably, it's important too. We're not talking about a 25 or 26-year-old, but like an early 20s.
okay, here's my general philosophy, right? And this isn't about driving people out of town or anything like that. It's all about the P word, the plan. Like, yeah. What is Jim Rutherford's plan? And every player has their price. There's another P word. That's why we have these conversations of, okay, what's the value of this player, and what does it cost to get them, and how are you going to use the pieces in your organization? Every player has that price. But if Jim Rutherford looks at this and say, hey, we're going to go through 1 year of struggle here while we get these young pieces and really start to integrate them into our roster. But 2024, watch out for us. And if that's what the plan is, then you open up a lot of conversations about other players on your roster. And so it all depends what Jim Rutherford and Patrick Alvin and the rest of the front office are trying to execute. And if we really get a sense of what that is, what the timeline looks like, then you can open up all these conversations.
Yeah, like, you have to look at it, you know, I think JT Miller in the here and now is a damn good player, but is the here and now the priority, or is it a year from now or a year and a half from now? Like, that is the question. And from everything that Jim Rutherford has mentioned, where he said he's not going to, like, you know, focus on the 10-game, you know, essentially the Bruce bump too you know, closely, that's something that he had said at the time, that leads you to believe it's beyond this year. It's beyond, you know, making, you know, the playoffs and that playoff push. Then you have to consider all those things, and Brock Besser's a part of that as well. We got this one, unsigned. Don't at me. Besser for John Klingberg, another Swede to the roster. He's an expiring deal. I know I'm not supposed to go at you, but that doesn't make any sense.
I'm not paying top dollar as well for that, on top of that, with that contract. All right. Thanks for all the good submissions. We'll get to some more on the other side. Adnan Virk also going to join us here in just moments here on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
This is the People's Show with Bick Nizar and Randeep Janda.
Welcome back to the show. Final segment of the People's Show. We'll make way for Canuck Central with Satir Shah, Dan Riccio in just a few moments. They'll have your pregame show, Puck Drop, at 5 o'clock tonight. Also, kickoff at 5 o'clock for Canada. Honduras later today as well. Busy sports day as well. We'll talk to Adnan Virk in just a couple of minutes here from the NHL MLB Network and the GM Shuffle podcast. I'm a little nervous here, Randy.
Why is that?
Because last week we did Don't At Me with Heat, and we didn't have enough time with Adnan last week, but we told him, hey, We know Cinephile Podcast. We know he's very passionate about movies and Al Pacino. And we were slandering Heat. And we said, hey, we'll bring it up next week with you. And I've been waiting in anticipation. Now here we're at this moment. I got to admit, a little bit nervous.
Bick, we just got to rip off the Band-Aid. Right off the top, just got to bring it in and just say, hey, Adnan, this is where we stand on this film. It has some good moments. But is it a top five? I would even argue top 10 Pacino flick. No.
And if people tagged us in tweets all week long, too.
Oh, yeah. We were getting dragged into fights, man.
You guys are so wrong. Look at someone rewatching Heat, tagging us, and we're like, do you guys want to watch it, too? Maybe you could adjust your views on Heat. And it's like, whoa, calm down. We have watched it many times over. I still feel the same. And we've been waiting all week for this. Adnan Virk joining us here. NHL MLB Network and the GM Shuffle podcast. And, of course, also the Cinephile pod. So we left it off with you last week, Adnan, with our controversial takes on Heat. And we've been waiting to have you on all week again. So here's the official take. It's a good movie, but it gets hyped up by everyone else a bit too much.
Okay, so I'm glad we're starting with this because we're going to need a lot of time on this, Beck. Good to chat with you and Randy, as always. Here's the thing about Heat. When I first saw it, I loved it. It came out in 95, and I do think your first impulse is important. So when I saw it in the theater, I said, this is a great film. Now, it was ignored by the Academy, which is fascinating. It was not nominated. Best Picture, Best Director, Best Actress, Supporting Actor, et cetera. And all those stars, right? Bob, Al, Val Kilmer, nothing. Academy said, nope, not interested. Okay. Now, at the time, it was actually a box office hit. The film cost about, I want to say, $75 million, which is a pretty hefty price tag. Maybe it made $100 million. I can double check that. But it was not a huge hit. But But it did well. People are like, if you love Pacino and De Niro, you like crime dramas, you like that film. The criticism was it was too long, but hey, that bank robbery scene was amazing. And of course, the scene with Pacino and De Niro was iconic. But it was ignored by the Academy. So years later, as you guys just alluded to, it's kind of built up steam. And more people have said, man, Heat's a great film. I love Heat, 20th anniversary, 25th anniversary. The great Bill Simmons has done three podcasts on the rewatchables. And his most recent podcast, they had Michael Mann on, the director, talking about it. I do think it's a great film. I do think it holds up. Now, I understand your point that at times maybe it's a little overrated, overdone. Is it one of my top 10 favorite films? No. Is it in my top 20? No. But what I love about it is the style, the vibe of Michael Mann. I mean, obviously, you know Miami Vice, the blues, the score. And I do think those performances are amazing. I do think that coffee table scene is awesome. I can feel Randeep about to criticize Pacino, so I'll say this. When you watch it, you say, okay, who stands out, right? If this is LeBron versus Jordan at its apex, De Niro comes out better. De Niro is lean and mean, and he's so convincing as Neil, especially that scene where he pulls off John Voight's talking to him, which is funny, by the way, because we all know now Voight and De Niro could not be more opposite politically. But Voight, you know, tells him he's there. He goes to go get Wingro one last time, and his scenes with Amy Brenner are so good. Pacino at times is overacting. There's no question about it. Al is going way over the top. You know, you get killed walking your doggy, the scene with Hank Azaria. But here's what's very important. Michael Mann had the original script that Pacino was a former coke addict. So the reason why Pacino is going big so many times is he said that the character's a coke addict, so he has these urges at times, these impulses. That's why he's so over the top. The biggest criticism of the film is often that Al is going too broad, but there's a reason for it. Michael Mann killed him in the editing. He should have included that important detail. I think it's a different film if you know that about Pacino's character, Vincent Hanna.
Okay, I like the comparisons to athletes as well. The one I made was, this is like Pacquiao versus Mayweather, but Pacino's Pacquiao, and it's a couple of years too late. And hey, Mayweather's De Niro, and he comes across pretty good, right? So I'm all for that.
Yeah, I think De Niro is amazing in the film. And obviously, again, if you're asking me, is it one of Bob's best performances? No, because I've got Raging Bull, and I've got Taxi Driver. I got The Godfather Part II. I got The Deer Hunter. If you want to throw in some comedies, I got Analyze This. I got Meet the Parents. I got Midnight Run. Like, I don't think it's one of his best performances. But De Niro is still so great because he's so cold and calculating, and he's so ruthless. And at the same time, shows that vulnerability, that loneliness that seems to Amy Brenneman. Having said that, when Pacino's cooking, he's still cooking. I love the scene on the rooftop where he says, you know what they're looking at? Us. The way he's laughing, right? The mutual respect he has for him. That's a great bit of acting by Al. And I do think that coffee table scene, those guys are both tremendous in that scene. They're both at a 10, both kind of circling the wagons. And Pacino is the key in that scene because he shows the vulnerability first, right? It's two sharks circling each other. Once he kind of says, the key line is, my life's a disaster zone. You know, and he starts explaining, you know, I've got my third marriage, blah, blah, blah. And one of the characters, Voight actually says it about Pacino to De Niro. The guy's in his third marriage, works all the time. You think this is the kind of guy sitting around, like, doing nothing? Like, this guy is so obsessive. So it's a fair comparison to Pacquiao Mayweather, but I think they're both great, of course.
It is Adnan Virk, NHL and MLB Network, and the GM Shuffle podcast, and the Cinephile pod as well. Baseball Hall of Fame this week. Me and Randeep talked about it a lot this week. Bonds and Clemens find their way out of it, the conversation. And to me, it's just annoying because it's supposed to be a moment of celebration. And it feels like David Ortiz has accomplished this great thing, and everybody's focusing on Bonds and Clemens not being in there. And I just can't help but wonder that baseball writers put themselves ahead of the story here.
Well, the key phrase you just said was baseball writers, Vic, because people are slamming baseball. I'm like, hang on a second. Major League Baseball doesn't have a vote in this. This is the Baseball Writers Association of America. So if you're mad about it, be mad at the writers. And, of course, everyone takes things personally. And David Ortiz, we all know, failed the test in 03. Yes, it was anonymous. Yes, it may have been a false positive. Although, unless you have a 617 area code and you root for the Red Sox, I think we all know, this guy was a washed-up athlete. The Twins released him. He starts using, allegedly, and becomes one of the greatest power hitters of all time. And he's beloved. He's a great guy, of course. I've talked to Ortiz. He's rambunctious. He's funny. He's gregarious. That plays a part. If Barry Bonds had smiled once or twice, maybe, yes, he would be in the Hall of Fame because the writers would say, he gave me that quote. He gave me that good interview. Here's the best defense of Bonds and Clemens being in. They were Hall of Famers before the alleged drug use, right? Three-time MVP for Bonds, three-time Cy Young Award winner for Clemens. I haven't been to the Hall of Fame in about 30, 35 years. I plan to go this year to support my friend Tim Kirchner. The great Timmy Kirchner is being inducted in the Hall of Fame. I worked with him for ESPN. He's a good, good friend of mine. I'm going to be there, and I want to take at least a couple of my kids, and I do think it will feel odd to go in the Hall of Fame and say, the best hitter I've ever seen, the best pitcher I've ever seen are not in the Hall of Fame. I get it. I understand what the writers are saying. Integrity, character, respect for the game. And I'm with you. I wish people would focus on the good rather than the bad, but this is society as it will. It's not Poppy gets in. It's how did Clemens and Bonds knock it in. And I will say the criticism, I think, is valid, because for Poppy, again, if you're going to vote him in, I get it. But why is he getting in on the first ballot? Like, to me, first ballot is very special. That's sacred to say you're a no-doubter kind of guy. With Poppy, there's a couple of doubts. At least make him wait a year or two. I get it. That would have been back-to-back years of nobody being voted in the Hall of Fame. But, yes, it does feel like a little bit unfinished business with Bonds and Clemens. But, again, if you're anti those guys, they made their own bed. They got to sit with it.
Yeah, we talk about Hall of Fame omissions to now another positive topic, a lockout. The talks are apparently progressing, but as spring training nears, what's the level of worry of will they get this in, or are we heading into spring training and potentially that being postponed or pushed back a bit here?
Yeah, as you know, Randy, MLB Network, NHL Network, same building. So I was doing hockey on Tuesday, which is Hall of Fame Day, and the building was buzzing. It's the best day we've had at MLB Network in 2 months because Bob Costas was there and Tom Verducci's there and everyone's talking Hall of Fame, so it was good. It felt like business was back to normal. And, of course, as you said, the lockout is still hanging in the balance. At least they have had conversations. The players have moved off the waiving of the six-year free agency, which I knew never would have happened. So thankfully they realized, hey, this ain't going to work fine. The owners have made a very important point, which is young players got to get paid more. And particularly what they'll do is they'll reward them with bonuses and incentives. Corbin Burnes, who was a Cy Young Award winner, made, I believe, something like $565,000. With this new proposed system, he would have made $2.38 million. Closer to home, Vlad Jr., I think, again, made around $500,000 this year. With the numbers he had, runner-up MVP, he would have made almost $2 million. And the minimum salary would be raised for all players. So that's important that the owners recognize, hey, young players want to get a slice of the pie quicker, and the players realize there is a point to waiting 6 years for a free agency. But the overarching point you mentioned is, are we at all closer, or are these just minor details? And unfortunately, I don't think this is the big picture. These are so-called minor details, the big stuff, the revenue sharing, anti-tanking, more playoff teams, DH, et cetera. All that stuff still hangs in the balance. I have said all along, the deal will get done post-Super Bowl. So that means between Valentine's Day and sometime in March. Fingers crossed, it's February 21st. We have an incredible week of free agency in which Clayton Kershaw and Kenley Jansen and Carlos Correa will all get signed. We do 1 month spring training. The season starts March 31st. But I do feel, and I am pessimistic, this will go into March. And what does that mean? Spring training games probably won't happen. We might have an abridged spring training. But I appear confident that games will not be impacted, which is, of course, what is the most important thing. I do think April 1st Major League Baseball takes place, but that means the lockout may not end until March 1st.
Adnan Virk joining us, the GM Shuffle podcast with Mike Lombardi. Looking at the weekend of football that was, Aaron Rodgers, they lose, and Nathaniel Hackett has already moved on to Denver. He got announced as head coach today. Should Aaron Rodgers maybe follow him or even leave Green Bay? Is another city the best spot for Aaron Rodgers, or should he stay in Green Bay?
Three options are going to happen here, Bick. Either one, he retires. I don't think that happens. He's about to win regular season MVP for the fourth time. Does he stay with the Packers? And we get a look at the numbers here. He's counting his salary $41 million against the cap, right? That's 20% above. And they've also got cap issues because they have to keep Devontae Adams. So the first thing Rodgers is going to see is, do they franchise Adams? Do they get a long-term deal with his number one wide receiver? That's the first piece. Then he's going to want to rework his own deal. Let's be clear. He's going to want a new three-year deal. He's going to want $50 million a year. Can the Packers afford that? Can they make the numbers work? Those are major, major questions to be answered. And you mentioned Hackett now in Denver. Get ready for the next 6 weeks of Rodgers to Denver because the Packers can't work out a deal. That one makes a lot of sense. The Broncos, I think, are a talented playoff caliber team. If they had a quarterback, if they get Aaron Rodgers, all of a sudden they're a contender. And you mentioned he's got a relationship with Hackett. By the way, the name Nathaniel Hackett sounds like he should have been in the Revolutionary War, like around 1776. Maybe War of 1812, Canada, USA. Check out Nathaniel Hackett there with his musket. Bottom line is this, he's 42 years old.
He was boys with Paul Revere.
Yeah, he's boys with Revere, riding around on a horse. But listen, he's 42 years of age. He's a young coach. I think for Rodgers, he's going to try to make it work with Green Bay. But let's be honest, they're 5-4 at Lambeau in home playoff games. He's 9-8 since that Super Bowl. May not be the worst thing in the world he goes elsewhere. I know that's crazy to say because Jordan Love is the heir apparent. We don't know how good he's going to be, but it's going to cost them a lot of money. Can the Packers make the cap work? That's the biggest question.
All right, looking back at last weekend, last Sunday, got to get your thoughts on this because you've got an encyclopedic knowledge. Best game ever that you've seen, Chiefs-Bills, or is that, further down the list for you?
Yeah, sometimes, Randy, if we're prisoners of the moment, and I still go back to the Frank Reich game when the Bills were able to rally that incredible game when they were down 32 points. That's up there for me as far as greatest games ever. But in a vacuum right now, I'd have to say yes. I mean, the overall weekend was incredible. When you have three games all being decided on walk-off field goals, and then that game goes to overtime, and I think the three of us all knew that would be the best game of the weekend. Josh Allen alone on that 17-play drive, converting a 4th-and-13 when Davis makes an unbelievable move, the defender falls, touchdown. That alone made it an instant classic. And then, of course, all heck broke loose when Mahomes drives him down the field. Allen responds with 13 seconds left. They get the field goal, all the rest of it. I think in terms of drama, it certainly is on the short list of the greatest games ever, especially that closing. I mean, if you had to look game to game, I don't know if the first half was as compelling as some other first halves I may have seen in football. But for drama from 5 minutes on, it's got to be at the top of the list.
We've been debating it all week. The OT rules. I don't mind it. I don't mind it the way it is. Randy hates it and wants to see it change. Where do you land on the OT?
It certainly felt frustrating in the moment because, again, like Pacquiao Mayweather, you want to see each guy get a shot. You want to see each guy throw some body blows, and Josh Allen doesn't get to get the ball. But the rules are the rules, Vic. I side with you and say, listen, I know it comes down to a coin flip, the most famous coin flip since Anton Chigurh, Javier Bardem flipping coins in No Country for Old Men. Call it, friendo. Hey, you know what, Bills fans? If you guys had just won the game, if you'd been smart enough not to kick the ball in the end zone, you wouldn't have had the game reduced to a coin flip. Yes, in the moment, it would have been nice to see college football style. Each team gets the ball, but I don't have a big issue with it. I think it's the way it works, and the Chiefs, it was very anticlimactic at the finish. You knew they were going to score there.
All right, before we let you go, Adnan, I got to get your thoughts on this. Big Ben officially calls it a career. What should the Steelers do moving forward here? Do they address the quarterback, play the long game, in a pretty poor draft year at the quarterback position? Do you hit up free agency, or do you go big game hunting in the trade market where there will be some high-end quarterbacks available?
The draft, as you just said, there's no big name available, so unless you want to draft down, fourth round, fifth round, take a flyer on a guy, go for it, but there's no easy answer there. Mason Rudolph is not the answer. They don't have a guy there right now that they know is the heir apparent. So that means they're going to have to make a trade, and they have known for a while that Roethlisberger was nearing the end. My man Lombardi said on the GM Shuffle, I think week 6, if you don't know, now you know. Ben's done. This is it. So they've been building for this for at least a few months. I'm sure they've got some trade options out there. Tomlin's a great coach. I mean, you look at top 5 coaches in the game, Mike Tomlin is one of them. That's why the Steelers will never really go through a true rebuild, but there's no doubt they have a deficit at the quarterback position. Hopefully they get a guy, and hopefully our boy Chase Claypool will thrive with the new quarterback.
He is Adnan Virk. He's got great opinions on NFL overtimes, and also listen to him on NHL, MLB Network, and GM Shuffle podcast. Adnan, we'll talk soon, man.
Vic, Randeep, I feel like I needed 15 minutes on heat, but we'll do it another time.
All right.
another time. Appreciate it as always, at Adnan S. Virk on Twitter. Another OT enthusiast, Randy.
Okay, that's one, actually. That's one that has sided with you. Everybody else has gone the other way.
Another OT enthusiast, I said.
Fake news.
we'll see if it happens in the Super Bowl.
I feel like Adnan's going to have like an emergency cinephile podcast right now in Heat.
Yeah, he might. Heat 2 announced the book, at least, coming out later on this year. The big game, a party at the Clayton Public House Sunday, February 13th. Sportsnet 650 and Clayton Public House partnering with the biggest football party in the Lower Mainland. 16 TVs, 2 projectors, $5,000. In prizes available to be won, including a smoker, ZZ Top tickets, and more. Tons of specials and exclusive offers. Listen to Sportsnet 650 closer to the game for your chance to win a table reservation and a $50 tab to get you started. Clayton is following all public health measures, including sanitizing stations, and all staff wear masks. We're getting ready for a Canucks game day versus the Winnipeg Jets later today. We like to do this now on the People's Show. Our best bets for the evening. What are we thinking, Randy?
Yeah, we're trying to help out the people here, so we're going to give you some bets. I'm looking at Kyle Connor anytime goal, plus 100.
Oh, no!
Plus 100. I'm sorry, but if you look at what he does against the Canucks, he's got 8 goals in his career, 22 points in 18 games. That's a pretty good number, especially if you look at all the other teams he's played in his career. Only scored more goals against the Leafs. The Canadian division has a lot to do with that, but doesn't it feel like Kyle Connor is always in the mix against the Canucks? I'm taking that plus 100. I think this guy is a elite sniper in the NHL, and I think he gets one tonight.
The reason I said oh no is my best bet is Kyle Connor over 1.5 goals at 7-1.
Wow. Okay, so you're doubling down.
I'm doubling down on what you said. I got Kyle Connor scoring 2 tonight. 7-1. Again, he does dominate against the Vancouver Canucks. It is Spencer Martin in goal. Again, I know he's played well. Kyle Connor, one of the elite shooters in the league. I think this might be the toughest task Spencer Martin has faced so far, going up against Kyle Connor. I got him pegged for 2 goals tonight.
Okay, so we are expecting Kyle Connor to pick corners against the Vancouver Canucks tonight. So that's not a great omen for the Canucks.
He genuinely might be my favorite shooter to watch. Like, I know Ovi is the GOAT at goal scoring. But, you know, there's a certain level of fatigue watching Ovechkin after so many years. Aesthetically, Kyle Connor is just, like, such a fun, beautiful shooter.
Kyle Connor is one of my favorites, but I got a lot of love for David Pastrnak because he can pretty much score any which way, right? Like, he is kind of, he plays that Leon Draisaitl, he'll get close to the goal line and he can go off with the one-timers there. He can score the greasy goals in front of the net, too. His shot is strong enough where he can pick corners from the slot area as well. So, Kyle Connor, David Pastrnak are two of my favorites.
Throwing Rantanen in there, throwing Laine in there. As far as aesthetically pleasing goal scorers, Connor topping the list.
And shouts to Patrick Laine with those Balenciaga shades as well, man. Very visually appealing as well.
Strutting around the ice and strutting to the rink as well. That's what Dan Riccio does as well. He walks the hallways at 6:50 with those Balenciagas and just like, all right, it's showtime. Let's do this.
Yeah,
let's do this.
I don't know if you can afford those.
The Canucks Central is on the way. We'll get you set up for the game later tonight as well with the pregame show. Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah, they are on the way. If you want to catch up on anything we talked about today, Irfan Ghaffar joined us in hour one, Ron McLean in hour two, and also our conversation there with Adnan. The Heat debate gets put to rest with Adnan. Go check it out. All out on Spotify or Apple. We'll be back tomorrow talking about a Canucks victory. Hopefully, we'll see what happens tonight. All on the way here on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.